Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. We take your questions that you've emailed us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. I'm joined by Pastor David Engelhart, where we go through the top lies of America and questions you guys have sent us about the founding of America, the philosophical underpinnings about America, the questions you might have on this Independence Day weekend. Independence Day is one of my favorite days of the entire year, where we celebrate the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. Please continue to email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. That's charliekirk.com/support. If you want to go to Tampa, Florida for our Turning Point USA Student Action Summit, go to tpusa.com/SAS, July 17th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. tpusa.com/SAS. Hope to see you there. It's Monday. I'm taking your questions. Hope you guys are enjoying your holiday. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and more. And HR manager salaries are never cheap. They're an average of $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E, was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month to month, there are no hidden fees. Cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend more time in HR compliance? Let Bambi help. Get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/Kirk, spelled BAM to the B-E-E, .com/Kirk. Don't let an unexpected HR issue destroy your business. So again, go to Bambi.com/Kirk, Bambi.com/Kirk. I'm here with Pastor David Engelhart. We're going to explore some of these questions together. Here is one in particular. Was America founded in 1619? Cynthia from Ohio has that question. Basically, her email that she emailed us, freedom@charliekirk.com, says that my teacher insists that we were founded in 1619. So I suppose the argument that Nicole Hannah-Jones, the charlatan, puts forward is America was a slave nation. And therefore, when the first slaves hit America, that was our true founding. Embedded in the lie that is that your children are learning, by the way, in elementary schools or in high schools across the country, is this belief, is this idea that because there was slavery that existed, the entire nation, our ideals and the documents and the aims and the ambitions of the founders is therefore, it is invalid. It must be completely thrown out. Now, never does Nicole Hannah-Jones ever, she's never able to provide original source documents that show a single founding father writing favorably about slavery. In fact, one of our listeners emailed this, and I forgot about this. In the proceedings of the American Continental Congress on October 20th, 1774, it showed the sense of Congress regarding slavery, quote, that we will need neither import nor purchase any slave imported after the first day of December, next after which time we will wholly discontinue the slave trade, and we will neither be concerned in it ourselves, nor will we hire our vessels, nor sell our commodities or manufacturers to those who are concerned with it. And the American founders made good on it. In fact, the American founders and framers in the Constitution put a moratorium on the importation of new slaves coming into America. It's in the final draft. It's actually in the approved copy of the United States Constitution that was ratified in 1787. You guys can see it for yourself. And the person who signed that into law in March of 1807 was Thomas Jefferson himself. Did you know in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence, in Thomas Jefferson's own handwriting, I've seen it myself. I've been in the archives in Dallas, Texas, where my friend David Barton has the original draft that shows that Thomas Jefferson wrote it with his own handwriting. He condemned King George for bringing slavery to the United States. Hey, Nicole Hannah-Jones, if Thomas Jefferson was so pro-slavery, why was he blaming King George for bringing slaves to the United States? In fact, let's read his own words. What did Thomas Jefferson say in his own private musings about slavery? He said this, quote, "King George has waged a cruel war against human nature itself. King George has violated its most sacred right of life and liberty and the persons of a distant people who have never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery into another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in the transportation thither." That's Thomas Jefferson writing in his own handwriting, saying, "King George, one of the reasons we hate you is you brought the sin of slavery here." Now you might say, well, Charlie, why didn't it make the final draft of the Declaration of Independence? That's a very good question. It's because in order to have the unanimous agreement of every single state, they had to have slave states and states that were about to be free, like Vermont and Massachusetts, who abolished slavery without any sort of external influence. They did it internally. And so to do that, they had to come to some sort of compromise at the great dismay of Thomas Jefferson, because Thomas Jefferson wanted to tell King George and poke him in the eye and say, you did this. You brought this to America. You see, slavery has always been the human norm on the planet. The question we should ask ourselves is, how did it end and why did it end? And what sort of philosophical transition was taking place where all of a sudden we realized and we recognized that ownership of another human being was wrong and was immoral? And the pastors who founded America had a lot to do with that, right, David?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the understanding that we were made in the image and likeness of God, and that we as human beings bore a stamp of dignity, not because of our color, not because of our creed, but that stamp of dignity was born because we were made in God's image and likeness. And the insanity of these 1619 projects is to say, don't you realize that every other nation in the entire world had slaves and were trading slaves either locally or internationally, and we were the first nation in the world to put a moratorium on slavery because our founders were influenced by Christianity to such a great degree. They saw this as a great shame and sin that was upon our nation, or would be upon our nation when we formed in 1776.
And so the Nicole Hannah-Jones types that are teaching your children, they also can't They can never explain the Northwest Ordinance. The Northwest Ordinance was passed right by the Continental Congress right before the ratification of the United States Constitution with unanimous consent. And the Northwest Ordinance was all about the new territories. It was all about, what are we going to do with this big open land? It was in 1787, the same year that the Constitution was ratified, not the Declaration. And in Article 6, Nicole Hannah-Jones, who now has tenure at University of North Carolina, I'd love to have her answer this. And by the way, she's considered to be the top intelligentsia of the idea that we are founded on slavery. I hope everyone understands the significance. This is not a philosophical debate. This is a question of whether or not America will continue to exist. If a country does not have a shared language, history, and culture, it is no longer a country. And so as long as people like Nicole Hannah-Jones and Ta-Nehisi Coates and Ibram X. Kendi and Robin DiAngelo, the charlatans that are teaching your children, are allowed to lie with impunity without any sort of cross-examination from people like us, it is death by a thousand cuts of the American Republic. But she cannot answer this. If we were founded on slavery, why is it that by unanimous consent, why is it with every single state agreeing, the Northwest Ordinance, which was Ohio and Indiana and Michigan and Illinois and Iowa and Wisconsin, said, quote, "There shall neither be slavery nor involuntary servitude in the said territory, otherwise than in the punishment of crimes whereof the party shall be duly convicted." Slavery was abolished in the new parts of America. The new territories, when you buy something new, that's usually a reflection of your value system. And there was no debate. It was done so unanimously. So the new lands were free lands. And the Northwest Ordinance says that very clearly. Now, if we were a slave nation, wouldn't the thinkers and the writers of Hamilton and Jefferson and Madison and Mason and Franklin, they'd say, oh, no, we want slaves to be in the new territories. How do you explain that, Nicole Hannah-Jones? The 1619 Project cannot explain this. They refuse to explain it and say, they say, oh no, it was white supremacy that was cloaked from within. No, it was the opposite. Instead, it was human equality, not white supremacy. It was the first new land that we are able to point to in the history of the world. New territory, a new place where all of a sudden the ownership of one other human being was forbidden. That's a big deal. In fact, that's something that's worthy of celebration. And so on July 13th, we should actually celebrate the Northwest Ordinance. Isn't it funny how all this stuff happens around the same couple dates, July 4th? And today we're right now on this day in 1863 is when tens of thousands of Union and Confederate soldiers were fighting for the future of our republic, right near this period of time. And so were we founded in 1619 only if you think we were founded on slavery? But no honest and objective observer of history, using original source documents, looking at what the founding fathers believed, why they believed, it could ever come to that conclusion. Instead, America was founded on this principle of self-government, checks and balances, an independent judiciary, natural rights, the consent of the governed, the hierarchy of a transcendent order, and human equality. And that human equality is best expressed in the Northwest Ordinance, the Declaration, and the U.S. Constitution. Look, can I tell you something that really bothers me? When good people get scheduled for cancellation for no reason. That's what's happening to Mike Lindell. I was just with Mike Lindell with 15,000 of my closest friends in Wisconsin. And Mike Lindell was hosting an entire event, and the media went after him like you wouldn't believe, and they're trying to take my pillow out of every single store. Mike Lindell is a good person. And if you need pillows, maybe you're moving in for college, or maybe you want to build a pillow palace, go to mypillow.com and always use the promo code Kirk. Remember, they won't go flat. You can wash and dry them as many times as you want, and they maintain their shape. They're made in the United States. For a limited time, Mike is offering his premium My Pillows for his lowest price ever. You can get a queen-size premium My Pillow for $29.98, regularly $69.98. So if you love America and you want to support the good guys, go to mypillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. You also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including Giza Dream Sheets and MyPillow Mattress Topper. MyPillow.com, promo code Kirk. If you love America and you want to support the guys that are trying to do everything they can to save it, go to MyPillow.com, buy a bunch of stuff, promo code Kirk. I'm going to play some tape here. David, you will not be able to hear it, but our listeners will. But I'm going to tell you, it's basically Nicole Hannah-Jones saying our founding is when the first group of Africans were brought to America. I want our audience to listen to this tape, and then I want you to react. Cut 96, please.
1619, in August of 1619, is when the first group of 20 to 30 Africans were sold into the Virginia colony. And what the project is basically arguing is that that is actually as foundational to the American story as the year 1776, because nothing would be left untouched by that decision to engage in the institution of slavery.
So Nicole Hannah-Jones said that the August 1619, the first group of slaves were brought to America. That is the fundamental turning point in America. David, why is that logically the wrong way to look at the founding of anything?
Well, on the one hand, it's just an arbitrary establishment of a quote unquote founding. Well, why wasn't it 1609 when the Dutch showed up and they were escaping religious persecution? Why wasn't it any other random date before
1620, the Mayflower Compact?
That's right. Any random date before 1776. And if we think analogously to the joining of a people, the joining of disparate peoples or disparate states to create one nation, you say, how does that happen? Well, it's kind of like a marriage. Two individuals agree to be joined permanently together. That would be called the founding of the marriage, when they sign the marriage license, when they all affirmatively agree that we're starting something new. Before that, they're two unique individuals functioning in unique ways for their own individual incentive. And that's okay. Is it the first time they met, the founding of their marriage? Of course not. No one would ever say that. What about the first time they got in a fight over, you know, what restaurant to go to for dinner? Is that the founding of their marriage? Of course not. You would be crazy to think, when you're establishing permanence of relationship, which is the founding of a nation, establishing a social contract, permanence, yes, of a nation, a covenant between one another. It's when we sign the documents and commit one to another. And that's what we were doing when we signed the Constitution. We signed to commit one to another.
And first the Declaration, mm-hmm, right? and the Declaration of Independence, obviously on July 4th, 1776. This was not a lighthearted document. 1776 was a profound year. It was the year that Adam Smith wrote The Inquiry into the Wealth of Nations. It was the year that Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense. It was the year that George Mason successfully passed the Virginia Declaration of Rights, just about a month before the Declaration of Independence, which ended up being the precursor to the American Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And then we had this beautiful document that was written that was basically, hey, King George, we're now governing ourselves. And so the Declaration of Independence starts super broad. When in the course of human events? When does that mean, David?
Yeah, that means that this is not just about us, but there are times in the history of the world where you have a tyrannical government and you are compelled, because of God's laws, the laws of nature, and God himself, the creator, you're compelled to disband or throw off that kind of tyrannical system in order that you and me, and whether black or white, who are created equally by God, that we can function in liberty and pursue the things like family and children and beauty, the gifts that we've been given.
So when in the course of human events puts in the first six words of the declaration that this is a document that has no bearing of time and is applicable to all human beings. You see, the Declaration of Independence was this incredible, it was so profound and it was so unique in the sense that these founders were saying, you know what's never really been done before? Really, people haven't been able to articulate what is a moral claim to government. John Locke did, and Cicero did, and Aristotle did. They said, here's our opportunity. And it says, basically, it starts really big, and then it gets super specific, and then it goes really big. So the way to think of the Declaration is wide, narrow, wide. So it starts wide. When in the course of human events? Oh, really? Thanks for being like the opposite of specific. So basically, Thomas Jefferson is saying, eternal. This could be applicable in the year 1400, year 2000, or year 2300. We're saying that nature is the norm, and we're making a moral claim that there's nothing necessarily special about our time. So what Thomas Jefferson starts with, from just a purely, like, just an argumentative type standpoint, he's saying, I'm going to tell you when it's right for people to do what we're about to do. And then I'm going to list in great detail why it's right and why it points up to that universal principle. And at the end, I'm going to tie it all together to say, this is really the time to do this. So it starts wide, then goes narrow, and then goes wide. If you are interested in American history, we try to do our best to tell you the truth about our country, the beauty of our founding, the exceptionalism of our documents, the philosophical roots of this republic, not a democracy, that we live in. It's very important, especially if you have children, if you homeschool. Maybe you're driving right now in a car in Grand Forks, North Dakota, or in Riverside, California. And you're just saying, man, I want to get this all information in one place. That's where the Charlie Kirk Show podcast comes in. We have a question here from Patrick from Virginia. It's kind of a meandering question, but he mentioned something around the slave Bible. What is that? And this was a question, by the way, that was emailed us at freedom@charliekirk.com to us, freedom@charliekirk.com. If we take your questions, you guys get a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine. What is that?
Yeah, so first of all, Charlie, the slave Bible was a Bible that was floating around in the early 1800s. Now, people say this phrase, don't you know the slave Bible existed? Don't you know that it was given to slaves? Don't you know that the United States of America and the churches were evil and complicit in slavery? What they don't tell you, because they don't know this, is the slave Bible never came to the United States.
What was the slave Bible, though?
The slave Bible was a Bible that it actually took out about 90% of the Old Testament. It contained only 10% of the Old Testament. And then it took out about half of the New Testament. And specifically, it took out verses like Galatians chapter 3, verse 28, that says, there is therefore now no Jew, Gentile, slave, or
all
free.
All free in Jesus Christ, yeah.
All of the scriptures relating to the freedom and liberty of personhood in Christ Jesus were torn out of the Bible and sent by this bizarre group that was pro-slavery to the West Indies, to the Caribbean. It never came to the United States. It didn't affect the nation. And we're talking, Charlie, 1810, 1815, not 1619. There was no 1619 slave Bible being passed around in churches in the United States. And they try to join these and implicate the church as being pro-slavery. When you have somebody like Wilberforce,
William Wilberforce,
who is going crazy to stand against slavery as a member of the church, as a representative of Jesus Christ and liberation for all of mankind.
So, but the accusation is that it was used in America. It was not.
Not at all. Never brought to the United States.
And some people might be listening to this. They say, well, this is kind of an obscure thing. No, this is taught in schools all across the country. They've been saying stuff like this without anyone stepping up, you know, to cross-examine them for quite some time. But then it also begs the question, then if they have to edit the Bible, then the Bible is therefore a document of liberty and freedom. It kind of proves the point that you and I have always made, that the scriptures left intact, unedited, actually were the driving force for the abolition of slavery. If bad people edited the Bible and sent it to the West Indies, then therefore it shows that tyrants were afraid of the Bible.
Yeah, scripture is anti-tyranny, which is why, as you mentioned earlier, all of these, you know, the Black Robe Regiment, all of these early preachers were fueling independence, because the scripture is about standing independently before God, your creator, and then saying, okay, this is the life I have to live, not dependent upon somebody else's random tyrannical, you know, demands, but before God himself. And if I do that rightly, my home and my community and my village, my neighborhood will flourish when I'm standing before the great judge, not some petty judge that just wants my taxes.
Totally. So Anthony, who's a good supporter of us at charliekirk.com/support, very wise guy. He sends in some really good thoughts. We have the best listeners, the people that send in just the most awesome. I learned so much from our listeners. People say, Charlie, how do you know? I read all these emails at freedom@charliekirk.com. We get some Looney Tunes at times. We like those too. We get some Fruit Loops and all sorts of people, but we get people that are so wise. So he says this, great question. I want to explore this with you, David. Afternoon, Charlie. Hope you're enjoying your trip to New York. Yep. Haven't been mugged yet.
Or stabbed on the subway.
Yep. In 1776, when the Declaration of Independence was written, I take it that the United States was formed since that the United States, we told England that we are breaking away. One reason for this is taxation without representation. That is true. That is one of the reasons, not all of them. Now, anything prior to that, including 1619, we were still under England's rule. My question, do people understand that everything before 1776, we followed England's rules and laws and we weren't our own country yet? If I am mistaken, let me know. I want to make sure I understand I have it correct. So the only thing, Anthony, and a great question, that I would say that you're not wrong, it's just not complete, is that I want to make sure I read the question here. Okay, yeah. So prior to anything in 1619, we were still under England's rule. My question is, do people understand that everything? No, not everything. That is not true. So England, what started the American Revolution was the aftermath of the French Indian War. The aftermath of the French Indian War caused this sort of border war between the United States and Great Britain, mainly because the United Kingdom, or Britain at the time, wasn't called the United Kingdom, they went really into debt and they inflated their currency to defeat the French Indian, and basically it was called the French Indian War, but we actually helped Britain. George Washington fought alongside British soldiers. And I think the French Indian War was ended in 1763, if I'm not mistaken. We can get an exact fact check on this. And so when we won that war, all of a sudden there was this tension point of, wait a second, how are we going to pay for the war? Was it 1763? Was that
right?
Yes. Yeah. Hey, I'm actually pulling these dates out of.
Pretty good, Charlie. Pretty impressive.
I don't know. That was totally out of thin air. So I get them wrong sometimes. And so there was this tension point, Anthony, to answer your question of how are we going to govern ourselves? So Britain comes in and they say, okay, now we have to pay for our war debt. And we're going to keep the soldiers quartered in the American colonies. This was one of the main complaints, by the way, in the Declaration. If you read the Declaration that Thomas Jefferson wrote, he says, you guys have soldiers everywhere in peaceful times. Why? And what's the Third Amendment to the Constitution? You cannot soldier quarters without reason or redress. And some people read the Third Amendment today, they're like, well, that's kind of stupid. That was a big deal back then. And so, Anthony, to answer your question, this is actually what started the American Revolution, was that the states or the colonies, the colony of Virginia, the colony of Massachusetts, the colony of Rhode Island. We were starting to kind of have these sort of continental compacts where we were starting to govern ourselves. And we were saying, Britain, you don't speak for us anymore. We can do this ourselves. And so, Anthony, what ended up happening was this tension point that boiled over into the American Revolution. Now, the fighting between America and Britain actually started before the Declaration. Lexington and Concord, if I'm not mistaken, was 1774. Was 1774 or 1775, and a boiling point up before that. It was just kind of the official, it was 1775.
Yeah.
It was before. And so this was it was not everything. I just want to make that very clear. But we had a buildup, right? So we had the Boston Tea Party. We had, Alien Sedition Acts might have not been till then. The point is that there was this slow motion, almost separation that eventually hit its breaking point in the summer of 1776. But there was plenty of self-government happening. For example, Vermont, in the midst of the Revolutionary War, abolished slavery. We did that totally autonomously. So Vermont, and this is a great talking point for your friends, they might say, well, America was founded on slavery. Then why was it that states were abolishing slavery before the Constitutional Convention?
Exactly.
We were doing that autonomously outside of the rule of Britain. So that's a great question, Anthony. Thank you. But it's not completely true to say that everything was under British rule. But David, some of the practices of tyranny and authoritarianism can be actually attributed to British rule.
Sure. And we have to remember, you know, world history, the context of world history. And when we think about 1776, obviously, it's fun to think about Britain as the bad guys. And they were, clearly. But the whole world, all of the developed nations, Spain, Britain, France, everyone had slavery and everyone had a slave trade. So, yes, they were British practices that we brought over. The church was trying to get rid of it. And people influenced by the church, by Samuel Rutherford and other thinkers, were saying, we need to do away with these ideas, with the practice of slavery, because there's an eternal law. And it's not just a local law. There's not a king in charge. There's God's law that's in charge. And then when we started applying those principles and they were proliferating throughout our, you know, first colonies, we were finding that freedom was a primary, it was being developed and discovered like it had never been before in the history of the world. And so it bled over into, not only do we want to be free from England, but all people
yes.
want to be free.
And that was a universal declaration. And what's so important, and you just reminded me of something, is that the Declaration of the Constitution was written on this idea of universal natural law. Aristotle started this conversation, but he stopped short by saying that all people are always under these principles. The reason is that Aristotle, in his time that he lived, he was somewhat contained to northern Macedonia or Greece. Cicero, who came after Aristotle, who was a one-year Roman consul and was killed and was butchered because he was way too effective, he was kind of a sarcastic writer, because of Rome's dominance globally of what they knew as the globe, he traveled a lot. He traveled from Gaul to the Middle East to Egypt. And Cicero wrote, he said, all human beings live under these universal principles. And so Cicero, thousands of years before the Roman, the American founding from Rome, said, no, there's a universal natural law. And so Thomas Jefferson picked this up and said, man, this is a big step forward. And he said right here, man, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve ties. But then he said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men created equal. All men, not white men, not American men, but all men. There is a universality to the American Declaration that is lost on the current intelligentsia. If you ask the current professor core, such as Nicole Hannah-Jones, let's play a little more Nicole Hannah-Jones. She's kind of the supervillain of today's episode. Cut 97, Nicole Hannah-Jones on how Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration and he owned 130 people and how those people were not included in the founding documents. And that's just not true. Cut 97.
Our true founding was actually not 1776. Mm-hmm. Our true founding was when we decided to engage in slavery, because we know as Thomas Jefferson was writing the declaration that we would issue to the world on July 4th, he owned 130 people, and Black Americans and enslaved people were not included in those founding documents or were not intended to enjoy the freedoms of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And we would argue that if you look across American life right now, almost nothing has been left untouched by that legacy.
Thomas Jefferson freed his slaves before his death, and Nicole Hannah-Jones can't even get her history right. She talks about Thomas Jefferson and then the U.S. Constitution. Thomas Jefferson was a critic of the U.S. Constitution, so at least get your history right. He eventually signed on to it and eventually freed the slaves. But I wouldn't depend on Nicole Hannah-Jones to be precise, because she's a college professor, which means her goal is to pathologically teach your children to hate the country. Did you guys know that 80% of grass-fed beef sold in the United States is imported from overseas? It's staggering. That's why I get my meat from GoodRanchers.com, because their product is 100% American. When you buy your steak and chicken from Good Ranchers, not only are you getting amazing meat, you're also supporting American farms. My friends at Good Ranchers have traveled the United States and met with the actual farmers that raise the livestock to ensure the product they are sending to your table is the very best. All the products are individually wrapped, which eliminate waste. It's a great product. GoodRanchers.com safely delivers American craft beef better than organic chicken right to your door. Buy one time, or better yet, subscribe. If you subscribe to any one of our packages, you will save 20% with each purchase. Subscribing brings the cost per meat down. Get steakhouse quality for less than $5 a meal. We love the family feast, which includes steak, chicken, and more. Stop trying to play the grocery store guessing game. No more Chinese meat. Get American meat. Know where your meat comes from with GoodRanchers.com. Support American farmers. Go to GoodRanchers.com to get $20 off, free express shipping. Maybe you're grilling for July 4th. Maybe you need to do something for Independence Day. Go to GoodRanchers.com. Use the code CHARLIE. 100% American beef and chicken. Steaks are always USDA choice and prime. Chicken is 100% all natural. So go to GoodRanchers.com. That's GoodRanchers with an S.com/CHARLIE. Or use the code CHARLIE. That's GoodRanchers with an S.com/CHARLIE. Okay, there are so many questions here. Okay, here's one. Again, this is, we celebrate the Constitution in September, but why not? Was the Constitution written to protect the financial interests of the elites who wrote it? Is this the garbage there too? I suppose yes. The short answer is no, it wasn't written to protect the financial interests of the people who wrote it. What could lead them to such a ridiculous accusation?
Right. So anybody that's coming through college thinks that corporations, money, business is all bad. They're all an evil. And so if there's any financial incentive, that means all of your dealings were dark. Well, most of us, every adult that has a job in the world, most of their life is functioning and working for financial incentives. So, of course, that was part of their life and part of what they were doing. But it wasn't greed. It was liberty. They didn't want, also, as you just mentioned, soldiers living in their house uninvited and unallowed. They didn't want to live in tyranny. In the Garden of Eden, we see this picture. Before the fall of man, man was working in the cool of the day. But in the Marxist kind of idea, all work is evil. All work is corporate greed and narcissism and wickedness. But from the biblical perspective, work is good. And financial incentive is good. It's a blessing as long as it doesn't become your God.
And so I'm still trying to struggle to see what their potential argument is, because you take, for example, when you win a war in a traditional historical context, you don't want to give up power. These are the first founders who won a war, and they went out of their way to create a system that made themselves less powerful. So this idea that they wrote a document just to protect their own financial interests is completely contrary to the actions of what they did after the war. You see, they could have beat Great Britain, and they could have said, ha ha, now we're going to create the Jeffersonian and Hamiltonian and Washingtonian ruling dynasties, and we're going to rule through ancestral right. And no one would have really questioned it. They said, okay, yeah, we're used to that. But instead, they said, no, we're going to create something completely different. We're going to have a way that you could show up and you can have representation and consent to the governed and independent judiciary. We're going to have a process of which power is allocated and we could take power away. That's the opposite of trying to protect some sort of financial incumbency.
Didn't most of the Constitutional Convention, because they were standing for liberty, lose their finances and their fortunes and get shot and killed in war and sacrifice literally their lives?
Well, let me prove it to you. Who is George Washington's descendant right now? I don't know.
I don't have an idea.
The point is that whatever wealth that they might have tried to preserve, it didn't work.
Right.
Meaning whatever land they thought they were going to preserve through the generations, no, liberty has a way to disrupt that.
Mm-hmm. There's a book written about the Constitutional Convention members and their sacrifice creating the Constitution and forming the nation. And I think it says the majority of them went bankrupt because they were putting their entire lives on the line to fight an empire to free the people of our nation from tyranny.
There's a beautiful letter written by one of the founding fathers after he signed the Declaration of Independence. And just so you guys understand, this was written in the summer when most wars happen at a port city in Philadelphia against the greatest navy ever assembled. the Navy of Great Britain. They were basically poking Great Britain in the eye, and they say, you know what? We're going to sign this in a place where we know we could be found, and we know we could be tortured. And how does the Declaration of Independence end? As we finish this episode and we remember one of the most, if not the most important document when it comes to self-government in history outside of anything that's in the Bible, it ends with, we therefore, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress assembled, appealing to who? The Supreme Judge of the world. For the rectitude of our intentions to do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and right ought to be free and independent states. And they finish and they say, finally, we pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. That's a really important line, though. They pledge it to each other. And they said, hey, John Hancock, I'm going to have your back. Hey, Ben Franklin, I have your back. This is a compact. Us 56 that are signing this. And by the way, these are 56 important people. These are 56 members of commerce and business, intelligentsia, faith and finance, you name it. These are the 56 of the most important people. And they say, we're going to try to change history. And we're going to pledge everything we have, our fortunes, and even something more important, that honor with a capital H is how the declaration ends. Everybody, we live in the greatest nation ever. And it's because of a group of 56 people decided to put everything on the line and say our rights come from God, not from King George. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support this program, go to charliekirk.com/support. Have a great Monday. See you soon. Thanks so much.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.